stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 59. And today's guest I would describe as an eclectic, diverse, good guy, Mr. Randy Hunt. Glad to have you, Randy.
It's my pleasure, Wayne. Glad to be here.
Now tell me, your parents grew up in Sophia?
My parents grew up in Sophia, yeah. My grandparents were from Sophia. My cousins are from Sophia. So, yeah, the Hunt side of my family, the Guy Hunt furniture store downtown Sophia. Guy Hunt was my great uncle that owned owned half of the buildings there. He leased what he didn't sell out of. And on the other side, my mother was a Farley. And on the Farley side of the family, Leighton Farley Sr. was a very prominent man in Sophia. In my uncle Leighton Farley Jr. was extremely involved in athletics, and he coached me in Little League and in midget football, and so both sides of my family from there. But I was born in Detroit.
Now, how did that come about?
Well, like a lot of families in the 50s, coal was down. The auto industry was, Detroit was the fastest growing city on the planet, and the auto industry was booming, and a lot of West Virginians. I actually have cousins. I had cousins in outside of Detroit where I grew up, but I was born in Detroit, lived in Plymouth, Michigan, till I was about 12, and my grandfather got ill, overcome by carbon monoxide, and ended up in a nursing home, and my dad moved us back here to kind of help take care of her.
So you can't help from being a Detroit Tiger and Detroit Lion fan.
I am a Detroit fan, born and bred. I was there when Al Kaline and Willie Horton and Denny McClain and those guys won the series in '68. And when you're 8 years old and your favorite team wins the World Series, you're stuck.
So I remember Rocky Colavito. Yeah. Of course, McClain, Norm Cash, Jim Northrup.
Jim Northrup, yeah, was on the '68 team.
And of course, if you go way back, Ty Cobb was.
Yeah, that's beyond both of our times. But yeah, Ty Cobb is probably the anchor to the Detroit Tiger.
You remember
history.
The name John Corsica?
No, that one's not familiar.
John Corsica lived in Beckley. And he played in the old Mountain State Baseball League for the Beckley Bengals, signed with Detroit Tigers, played in their system from 1937 to 1950. And he went in, he was a great hitter, but they changed him into a pitcher. And he actually pitched in a World Series two games. And he moved back, he was in the pros about 12 or 13 years. And he moved back to Beckley and owned or ran Bowick for a long, Leisure Lanes.
Yeah.
Nicest guy in the world. And he used to tell us some baseball stories when we used to go up and hang around. But he was Detroit the whole time. He was affiliated with them. And, of course, he's passed away now. But he was a great guy. And then in the Lions, of course, Dick Knight, Train Lane, and Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders was my guy, yeah. So, yeah, I'm a Lions fan. I'm not one of these guys that follows who's winning. I stick with my Lions and my Red Wings and my Pistons. I was a bad boys guy back in the day. So, yeah, I'm a Detroit guy and not ashamed of it, and still keep up with a bunch of my kids that I went to grade school with through social media. It's really crazy that I still have connections in one of my best buddies from childhood, Eddie Moss, got MS, sits in front of a computer all day, and we chat Tiger stuff, and we keep up with each other's lives, and it's the social media's been incredible for keeping up with old friends.
That's great. That's great. Now, did you get a liking to the Motown sound? I mean,
I did. I remember in the fifth grade, I won a transistor radio for some kind of poster contest, and I remember going to sleep at night with that little transistor radio underneath my pillow, listening to the Diana Ross and Supremes and the Spinners and the
Four Tops,
and I did. I like all music, but I grew up. I mean, you know, I'm same age as Michael Jackson, and I was a Jackson 5 guy when I was a little man, and so I did. I still like the Motown sound.
I do too. Yeah. I grew up with it. I wasn't as close as you were, but that's what I listened to, what I danced to when I got a little older, and still follow it. And you know, the old songs, I haven't found any got any better.
No.
But so then when you came back to Sophia, you were around 12?
Yeah, I was going into the sixth grade.
That's when we had a association.
Yeah.
I was the basketball coach at Sophia Elementary. Paul Craighead was the principal.
Yep.
And I worked in a reading clinic for about a year and a half. And one of my requirements when I took the job was I had to take the sixth grade basketball team. And I didn't know a lot about basketball. I played a little bit in elementary school and stuff. But I went and got this book, John Wooden's Pyramid to Success.
Yep. I have that book on my shelf. Yep.
And I used some of the plays and the different drills and stuff that he had. I think I kept it out of the library for about 6 months. And but you guys, I can't remember. I remember you, Richard Blackburn.
Richard Blackburn, Terry Trotter.
Terry Trotter, there was an Attilly boy.
Yep, we called him Chuck, Chuck Attilly. Donnie Klein. Great. I mean, those are my buddies they weren't just my teammates. They were the guys that we spent the night at each other's house. We grew up together. We slept in the tent in the backyard. Sophia was, you know, I moved from the city to the little town of Sophia, and it was such a fantastic place to grow up. You could ride your bike from my house, which my mother still lives right there across from the post office. And you could ride your bike all the way down past the old high school, down to Soak Creek. It's all level. And go up to the grade school at that time, and you could play basketball till dark. Everyone ran around with each other. It was, you don't realize till you get older what a great place it was to grow up.
They went to the elementary went to the eighth grade,
right?
And back then they didn't have a season for basketball. We started playing in September, I think, and on the outside court, and you played till April the next year. And if you could get, they had some tournaments during the winter.
Yeah.
And occasionally, I remember taking you guys, we go up to Beckley and play Central, who was usually thrashes a few times. But outside of Beckley, we didn't do too bad. You guys were pretty talented.
We did. And I mean, the same guys, you know, all the way through high school were pretty good. And I know our eighth grade year, Kenny Ward came on and was our coach. And then you were sixth grade, and Richard Colasurto was, I think, coaching when I was in seventh grade, and then Kenny Ward had our team in eighth grade. But we had a good team. We had won a few tournaments my eighth grade year, and just great memories. Same guys played. We played youth football together. We played baseball. You know, it's a lot of the same guys.
And Coach Douglas was the coach at the high school at that
yes.
time, and he would let us come down and after the high school teams would practice, and the eighth grade would get it some days, and the sixth grade would get it some days, and he was so good, you know, to work with, and the guy was just, and he would stay there and watch us, you know, practice and he had some pretty good ball clubs himself.
Coach Douglas, he was a legend, and
yeah.
I mean, I could tell you stories about Coach Bob. One of my favorite stories, Coach Douglas at Sophie High School. I was probably I don't know if I was a freshman or sophomore, but we had, you know, Coach Bob and Don Knuckles at Mullins were arch enemies. There were probably no two coaches that hated each other. The schools hated each other. They had a rough history, and I'll never forget. Coach Douglas had already had a couple technical fouls during the season, and he got a letter from the SSAC telling him he could not get out of his chair. Not allowed to get out of his chair for any reason whatsoever. He's going to be automatic ejection. So we're playing Mullins, and you know, I had no idea what the score was. We were at home, and Coach got upset with an official. He grabbed both sides of his chair. He hopped all the way out on the court, gave the referee his business, hopped all the way back, sat down in his chair, and I'll never forget it. He was something else. One of the winningest coaches.
I know there was a couple years back then that they had a rule for all the coaches had to stay in the chairs.
Yeah.
And Don Knuckles was notorious for bringing a towel, and he would start swinging the towel around and getting attention.
I got to know Don Knuckles later in life. One of the most friendly. He and I would see each other and we immediately strike up conversation about the older, but you know, as a kid, you hated these guys, and it's amazing when you get them off court. How Don Knuckle, I just admired him to no end when I got to know him later on in life.
Now, when you got to high school, you played basketball and baseball.
Played baseball and basketball, and I didn't play football. I ran cross country, but now of course I was there when they built Independence, so I went to Sophie High School 2 years, and I went to Independence High School 2 years. So I was there when the school opened.
So Joe Goddard was your coach.
So Joe Goddard, I was on Joe Goddard's, the first team he ever coached. It was actually a big league. I guess big league was a part of little league at the time. It was like 15, 16-year-olds. So Joe coached our big league team the summer before Independence opened. So I played on the very first team. It was Joe Goddard and my uncle, Junior Farley, were the coaches. And we had players from Woodrow and Independence. Phil Colcerto played with us. Trying to think of who else. But I played for Joe his first two. I'll tell you, a story about Joe Goddard, just to back up. I was amazed when I heard Joe Goddard's going to be our high school coach, because when I was still living in Michigan, and we'd come here, and I was at my grandfather's house, and we're sitting there watching the Cincinnati Reds are playing the Padres, and my grandfather jumps out of his chair and he says, "There's Joe Goddard! There's Joe Goddard!" And I'm like, and I'll never forget him, because it was like my grandfather was so excited. That's a Sophia boy right there. That's Joe Goddard. And Joe was playing on television. 5 years later, he's my high school coach. He's my big league coach and my high school coach. And he is still one of my good friends. We golf. We still go out and golf. And he's cutting to the story. He's now the assistant coach at WVU Tech. And I'm a former Tech baseball player. And so it's just crazy how things sometimes come full circle. So I'm real close with the baseball program at Tech.
And so you went to Tech. Who was the coach at Tech then?
Bob Brown was the coach at Tech.
He was a cross-country coach.
He also coached, and I ran cross-country and played baseball at Tech. I wasn't the greatest cross-country runner. I did it mainly to stay in shape and in the fall. Bob, we called him BB. B.B. Brown, he was our baseball coach all the 4 years I played at Tech. And good, again, great memories. Some of my closest, best friends ever from my college days. Jeff Davenport was one of my closest friends. Matter of fact, Jeff was in Florida yesterday sending me pictures of Miguel Cabrera batting and in spring training. He's down in Florida. But Jeff Davenport was, conference player of the year. He got drafted by the Royals, went down, got cut after a few weeks, and ended up being a pastor of a church in Charleston. But Jeff and I are still close, and great memories in Montgomery. Played down at Hansford. We played at Hansford when I was there. Played a Boomer 1 year, and then we moved down to Hansford.
And I think Doug Epling actually built a stadium down there later.
Doug took the field at East Bank, so they Tech ended up playing at East Bank when Tim was coaching, and the field was there. Doug just made major improvements. He astroturfed the infield, built new dugouts. Beautiful, it was a beautiful facility, and new scoreboard, and it's a very nice field.
How did you feel about WVU Tech moving to Beckley?
Being a Beckley native, I was excited. A lot of guys my age, when Tech became, it was West Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
When I was there.
Yeah.
When WVU bought the school, you know, it is now West Virginia University Institute of Technology. There was a lot of people my age that were not happy. They felt they were, you know, stealing our school. There was a lot of negatives. In the long run, it's been extremely positive. The things that Tech is doing now is incredible. I'm extremely close with the campus. I am on the executive committee of the Alumni Association. We are in the process right now of building. We're bringing football back, which is, and I've known about this for a couple of years. We have to try to keep it on the low down, but it's public knowledge now. So we're going to convert one of the soccer fields out at the complex, the Y complex, into a football stadium. We're also going to build where at one time they were going to build a new Y back in the behind there. We're going to build baseball stadium, softball stadium, and it's my understanding they're going to do a cloverleaf softball stadium where you can hold tournaments. I'm not 100% certain. I have seen blueprints. But that is exciting. Yeah, when Tech made their move to Beckley, and I knew I was involved with Tech a little bit. When my son played basketball at Independence, I sent him to all the Tech camps, the basketball camps, and I got to know Bob Williams really well, the basketball coach at the time. During that time, you know, we talked, and they're like, "Well, they're coming to Beckley." My son he offered a walk-on to play basketball at Tech, but he was going into engineering. He decided to go to WVU. He said, I just can't play. I don't want to put effort into playing and not get my grades. But I got to know the coach well and the athletic director, Kenny, and my relationship with them has been fantastic. I had been doing PA for all the Independence football games and a lot of the basketball games when my son played. And so when Tech came here, I just emailed Coach and said, "Hey, if you guys need somebody, I'm not looking to take a job. I'm not really pushing for this, but if you need somebody, give me a holler and I'll be glad to do PA any of the games you got." And first game they played here in Beckley, I got a phone call, "Hey, we need somebody. Can you be here?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be here." And did my first game with Tech, and athletic director showed me the schedule. "Can you do any of these other games?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll do them all." Yeah. And so I've done every home game that I've been able to do. I've been a couple I've had to miss, but so I've been their PA guy now for, this is my, I don't know, fifth year or whatever, and it's so exciting. The brand of basketball Tech plays is on the NAIA level is fantastic, and we have a history.
You think they'll ever go back to NCAA?
That's honestly, that is the game plan. In order to bring football back, and that's like a 3-year project. It's going to be 3 years. The conference we're in now does not have football, so the ultimate goal is to go back to D2. Tech was D2 at one time when they were in the West Virginia Conference, and I won't get into that story, but they dropped back to NAIA, dropped out of the conference, and their plan is to go back to D2. They would like to join the MEC. They will start out with JV football. You can't put a varsity program together in 1 year, so it'll be JV for a couple of years. then they'll try to start a varsity, but that's going to increase our enrollment. We plan to build our third dorm to coincide with Ring of Football. We think we can fill a dorm up with football players.
So you're doing the PA for the football games. You're doing the PA for the West Virginia Tech girls and boys basketball and some basketball games at Independence. Do you do a radio broadcast?
So the last 2 years, I've done football games at Independence. I think this is my eighth year. So, yeah, I've been doing PA for football. I've been doing all the Tech basketball games for the last several years. Last year, I started doing radio play-by-play for Independence, and which last year was no problem because the high school season was delayed because of COVID. So the college season, I was doing PA for Tech at the time, and it almost was over before high school even started. So it wasn't even a big deal last year. So I did all three last year. I did all three this year, and I had to do a little bit of juggling. I missed a game here too, for Tech or Independence, but I got them all in. I have to figure out what I'm going to do next year. It's a bit much.
I was getting ready to say that's every night.
They don't typically play on the same night, so there are a few nights they do overlap, and then with delays and rescheduling stuff, yes. you don't know. I might have four or five games in 1 week, I did have 1 weekend where I had a game on Friday night, had two college games on Saturday afternoon, and another radio game Saturday night. I did four games in 2 days and came down with COVID the next day. I thought I was just getting laryngitis, but I ended up laying out for a couple of weeks.
Now, when you graduate from Tech, what'd you get a degree in?
My degree was, I got a BS in accounting and associate science in computer science, and served me really well. I retired in 2020 from the West Virginia State Tax Department. I was worked for auditing division for 30 plus years, and started out as an auditor. My computer degree, I was so blessed to be a part of that transition. I was on a computer team. For 10 years, I was a computer audit specialist. We went from pencil and paper while I was there to using laptops to do audits. And there was a team of us that wrote the programs, audit templates. And it was very, very, I'm proud of the time that I was there and the transition we went through. And I've always been a computer kind of geek. Now, when I took computer at Tech, it was mainframe. I took COBOL and Fortran and BASIC, and we had punch cards. There was no PCs.
Not like it now.
When PCs came on the scene, they were very confusing to me. I'm like, I don't know where do you put the punch card on this thing? We used to write every line of program on a notepad, and then you type in these punch cards one line at a time and have a shoebox full and take them down the tech center. It was quite a process. It's been really interesting growing up through this computer age, and now seeing where we're at today. It's crazy.
You're also in the realty business, and how long have you been doing that?
This is my ninth year. I'll back up. When I first graduated from college, Dick Armantrout was my Sunday school teacher, and he was a broker and an appraiser, and he offered to pay for my real estate license, and he set me up, and I sold real estate for about 6 months in the mid-80s, and I would have starved to death. the interest rates were 13-14%. It was a tough sell, but I enjoyed it and liked it, and I always said if I could ever get in a position where I could get back into it and not have to depend upon it to pay my bills, I would love to. So in 2013, I'm thinking about retiring here in a couple of years, maybe get some real estate, do some real estate to supplement my retirement income. And by 5 years in it, I'm honestly making higher commissions than what I was making with my day job. And so when into 2020, I'm like, it was perfect time to retire from my day job, and I'm full-time real estate and enjoy it.
I was in the real estate business for a while years ago. I actually started out when Jerry Zaffiratis first started, and but they did. We didn't even, cell phones were just coming about at that time. And
that's my first go around. It was like pagers were the big thing. I don't know how we did it. And I still am like, how you listed property and you made copies and you distributed them to other realtors, and it's so different now. I mean, it's actually the listing part, and it's all electronic, and advertising's electronic, and I don't advertise a newspaper.
Is it a buyer's market or a seller's market?
It is an extreme. It's an extreme seller's market. Has been for 2 years, and my first 5 years, Beckley was a buyer's market. There were just tons of homes for sale, and it's hard to explain, but it's like COVID hit. And the market just went crazy. And there's several factors. The last couple of years, the interest rates are still historically low. They're starting to creep up. But 3% and under interest rates. There is one of the problems we've had is there's a lack of housing. The federal funded loans, no foreclosures for a year and a half. If you just said the word COVID, they couldn't foreclose on you. And as you know, the building material prices went through the roof, so there was no new building materials, no new construction. So we were working with existing housing. There was an article in the National Realtors magazine a year ago. There were more real estate agents in America than there were houses for sale in early 2021, which is just crazy. Well, we had an influx of new agents. The housing market started going up in 2019. People were losing jobs, and everyone's like, well, let's get our real estate license and make money like everybody else. Well, we had a massive growth of realtors and number of homes to sell. So it just went, and it really doesn't change anything for us as a realtor when it's a buyer's market. I'm looking for buyers. Or looking for sellers, you're one way or the other. Right now, I'm looking for people selling. If you got a house for sale, then you're my best friend, because we can sell your house pretty quick if we list it at the right price.
Are they in Beckley, the Beckley area? Have they started bidding on houses? Yet?
Well, price ranges anything under $200,000. There are people waiting in line. I listed a little house in Prince Wick last week, and we had 12 showings in 24 hours and had 4 offers.
Wow.
And sold it that next day, and these were good offers. It's still under contract, so I can't disclose the dollar amount, but that's what we're finding in that price range. Now, when you get up above $400,000, you're the market's a little bit different, and commercial market's always a little different. But Glade Springs, houses 300,000 under, they're gone in a day.
In the meantime, not that you didn't have anything to do, but you started Mountaineer Drone Media.
That's been about 4 years ago. I'm a geek. I'm a Radio Shack kid. And you remember Radio Shack? That was my problem. If I could shop at Radio Shack, I buy a kit and put something together. And I love technology, and so. Drones are coming out. They're so intelligent. And I told my wife for Christmas one year, I said, only thing I want for Christmas is a drone. And it was December, and December was typically a slow month for real estate. So I started studying to get my drone license, my pilot license, which I am legally, to use a drone for commercial purposes, you have to be a licensed pilot. And so I studied. I passed my pilot's exam.
Just like a license.
I am a licensed ground pilot. I'm a licensed drone pilot. The test involves you've got to know airspace. You got to understand airport layout. It's crazy what you have to take on this test and exam. And obviously, all the drone regulations that are ever changing all the time. It's because it's such a new profession. They're constantly, and it's mainly safety issues and things like that. But my initially, I wanted to get my drone license because that way I could use it for my real estate. Uh-huh. So I can take videos and photos, particularly Glade Springs. If you own a golf course, get video of the golf course, or Flat Top Lake, you get the lake, and or even vacant
are there
land.
Many pilots around
the licensed pilot. I know three or four. I know there's another realtor that is a licensed pilot. There's not many. I work for other agents and work for my broker a lot, and I do commercial stuff. There's a couple websites you can get involved with where they need a drone pilot to take photographs. I've done a lot of the businesses around Beckley. I can't say who they were, but commercial buildings, and they'll want 50 photos from all these different angles, and I will.
First one I ever saw, we were at a wedding in Pennsylvania, outside wedding, and they had a drone.
I've done weddings,
and it was really neat. Some of the stuff that turned out.
I've done weddings, and I don't like doing weddings. There's a big difference in droning a wedding and droning a house. Because if I mess that wedding up, I only got one shot. If I mess that house up, I can come back tomorrow and the next day and next day, and that house is still sitting there. So that's high pressure stuff. I'm not into the wedding thing, but there's some guys making good money doing videos for weddings. That's incredible. It's incredible stress for me.
Now, you're also pretty active in the church, aren't you?
I am. I've been at Memorial Baptist Church since my mother drugged me there at 12 years old, and she's still there. And I teach for the last 20 some years, I teach the college class, the young adult class, and been a deacon there since the late 80s. And been there forever.
And we can't. We got to talk about your mom a little bit. You've had recently had a tragedy with your mother, and I think a lot of people around the Beckley area have probably heard or seen about, but could you tell us a little bit about that, Sherry?
Yeah, well, first of all, she's doing well. I saw her last night, and she just had like any of us, she was getting in her car and was getting ready to pull out and thought she dropped her cell phone in the parking lot, and like, okay, I'm gonna get out and get my phone, and she didn't realize she had put the car in reverse. Stepped out when she took her foot off the brake and obviously started backing up and knocked her down, and kind of knocked her on her side, and the front wheel rolled over on top of her back, or side and her back, and broke some ribs. And fortunately, we had several people get there quick and got her to the hospital. She had a quick surgery, and she was very fortunate to only come out with broken ribs and bruised lung, but the recovery process, 83 years old, it's slow, and she's in a nursing home right now for rehab. But she's doing well. We were there yesterday. She's sitting up and eating, and they cut her open they thought she had some internal bleeding. So between cracked ribs and having your abdomen cut open is hard to get back up on your feet. So but she's doing well.
Still open for prayer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we all are. Yeah.
Now you have. One thing coming up here, Ryan Haga. Tell us a little bit about Ryan Haga and the events you've got coming.
Yeah, first of all, Ryan was one of my best friends, and the reason that I do PA is because of Ryan. Back many years ago, when Ryan's son Tyler was a year behind my son, and Ryan thought we needed. We need to have PA for basketball. Both of our kids were good ball players, and we're like, Ryan's like, you need to do PA. I'm like, Ryan, I don't even like speaking in public too much. And you want me to do PA? Yeah, you'd be good. And he talked me into it. And he sat beside me. He was my spotter, kept score and all that. And so he's the reason that I'm doing PA to this day at Independence High School. And Ryan. He later became referee, and he refereed most Independence games. But Ryan, he died just last October. A just freak thing. He was out hunting. Killed a huge, beautiful, beautiful deer. Huge rack. And chest started hurting, and he just passed out and died before he got to the hospital. And we think it was an aneurysm. Just saddest thing. And I'm so, you know, I love his family and his wife, his kids. And so Greg Fournette and Marty Jones had contacted me, like, we're going to do this golf tournament. We're going to, part of the tournament's to support the Haga family. And part of it's going to be to support the Coalfield Conference. And we've already sold out a morning and an afternoon tee times. We've got 100 golfers. Was it 100 or 100 teams? No, it's, I think, I didn't have it written down, but we have, Glade is saying this is going to be the biggest golf tournament we've ever had at Glade. We're having a cornhole tournament in the afternoon. We're having an auction. We're going to have Owen Schmidt's going to be there. We've got a couple of people we haven't announced yet because we're kind of waiting, but we're going to have some celebrity people type there. I know Owen Schmidt's coming to play golf and to sign autographs and whatever. But this has turned into a massive tournament, and right now we've got the Cobb course for two sets of shotgun tees. There's a chance we might add a third. We had a dream, but this has exceeded our dreams.
So the registration is still open?
It's as far as I know right now, it is, yes.
This is on April the 10th?
Is it the 10th or the 9th? April 10th. Yeah, got it written down right there. It's April 10th, right. And we're still taking, obviously we're still taking advertisement for, you know, the whole sponsors and whatever. We've got, we'll take as many whole sponsors as we can get for the tournament.
Well, listen, Randy, man, time flies.
Yes, it does.
want to get you back because we got to talk about what's in the future for Randy Hunt and a few other things that's going on. And I appreciate you being here. And is there anything that you want to add before we sign off?
No, I guess we're we pretty covered everything. you know, you covered my childhood and growing up. Again, I'm a people that know me. They know that I support my Independence Patriots and I support my Tech Golden Bears every way I can, and I'm excited for both programs. Football wise, Independence is going to be back. They're going to be.
I'm looking forward to close college football.
I am so excited about Tech football.
Yeah.
We have homecoming every year, and you know, no offense. But, you know, they'll have soccer or wrestling or volleyball.
It's not the same.
No offense. No offense whatsoever. You will not get alumni to come back unless it's football. Now, yeah. we did have a great basketball homecoming. Our homecoming this year was in February. It was the last home game. We gave away free tickets. It was free admission. Had a great turnout. Unfortunately, I was not there. I came down with COVID the week before, and I was so disappointed I missed that. But huge turnout. We had a capacity crowd. We had things for kids to do. We had the Woodrow Band there. It was great. So Tech basketball is fun, and to bring football back is going to be huge for Beckley. This is not just this is going to help the university expand. I know, you know, Tech bought that campus for $8 million. I know the multi-millions they've spent since then, buying land. They're going to expand. There's expansion on the way behind the campus. There's more classrooms. We need a new engineering lab. There's lots of things going on at Tech. Tech is one of the few colleges in the state that's maintaining enrollment. A lot of them are dropping. Beckley's a perfect small college town.
I think
we've got, and WVU, it's not bad to have WVU as your big brother.
Yeah.
Because when football starts, that football program in Morgantown will be supplying us with leftover equipment. It's going to be a plus for Beckley, for the community. Our hope is the baseball, softball field. They're going to be able to have tournaments, summer tournaments there, where kids don't have to travel out of town to have softball tournaments.
I'm looking forward to it. And well, anyone else out there, if you would like to be on our show, contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'd be glad to have you. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And thank you, Randy Hunt, and God bless you.